busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train on us, feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained, then rode us all the way into New Orleans.
Welcome, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show across the Civic Media Network. It's really exciting to be back on the radio for a regular show. I first want to start with some big thanks to Civic Media's CEO, Sage Weil. Thank you so much for having faith in me to put me on the radio, and I wouldn't be here at all except for a guy named Mike Crute. Now, I don't want to give him too many compliments lest his head get too big, but my big shout out to Mike again for giving me a shot to come back on the airwaves with all of you statewide. Just so much to talk about. But I did just want to set a tone right out of the box and share with you all, my dear listeners, a little bit of my philosophy here on what is the Maggie Dawn Show. Some of you may remember me from the dawn of the resistance back when we are on Brady Street, the liberal heart of Wisconsin. And really, I had no idea what I was doing back then. I just got on and talked about stuff that seemed to be interesting to me. And, you know, a couple of people tuned in, which was great. But I did want to share with you my philosophy about this show, because I want to try to approach this with a lot more intentionality. And so what do I want to be talking about really will depend from week to week, both on what's latest in the headlines, but you're going to see some themes that I think will develop over time. And those themes are really about getting underneath what might be in a headline and trying to talk about why these things that we're seeing in these news cycles matter to you and I on a day-over-day basis. And I've been pretty fortunate in my life to do some very interesting work in a lot of different sectors and for a lot of different kinds of clients and employers. And I hope to use that to try to inform our discussion so that we can take what sometimes is the surreal and break it down into the real for all of us here in the great state of Wisconsin. Sometimes, you know, we hear callers call in with differing viewpoints. I love that. I want to hear about the disagreement. I want to hear you call me out. I want us to learn together. But there are a few things that will not be tolerated on this show, and that is things that are hateful, personal attacks and attacks on groups of individuals wholesale. And I mean that both from the left and the right. I think it's time that by getting past headlines, we can speak to our values. And those are values that are shared, right? So much of what the argument seemed to be today seemed to separate us, seemed to try to suggest that we have different values. But I don't believe that we do. I believe the vast majority of us, especially here in the state of Wisconsin, have so much more in common than we do that divides us. And so much time is spent in the media effectively leveraging and exploiting those things that we think divide us to make a buck. And I don't want to do that here. And I want you to help me stay honest about that. If you think I'm going too hard on something, if you think I've lost my marbles, call me up and tell me that. Anyone is welcome on this station at any time, especially you new callers, you new listeners. I want to hear from you. That number, you can join us today. We're going to talk about a couple of things, including what the heck this whole default thing was about. What did it mean to us and who won? So if you want to weigh in on this question about the default, who won, Republicans or Joe Biden, you can reach us here, 844-967-2789. I want to hear about what you think. Do you think Biden like screwed the pooch on this one? Or do you really think that Biden truly showed that he's got the calmest head inside the beltway and really pulled quite a smash and grab with Republicans? I see a few folks tuning in already. Listen, longtime listener, I got to start with my man, Mark from the SAC. Mark, how are you, my friend? And who do you think won, Mark McCarthy and the GOP or President Joe Biden and the Dems?
I think Biden won hands down, that he could have invoked the 14th Amendment for the Constitution, yet he chose to be the voice of reason in this whole thing. And even though I think that because he was the gamble with the Supreme Court is that the anti-federalist Federalist Society Supreme Court, you know, who knows how they would decide on the Constitution. I mean, that that, and I use that phrase intentionally, the anti-federalist Federalist Society, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that I think that they represent the people who were anti-constitutionalists back in the day, and I think they still object to the Constitution because it is, you know, expansive of human dignity and human rights. That, and I want to thank you again. You kind of, you know, got me through, you know, some of my chemotherapy back in the day. That, and I'm getting healthier, you know, by the day now. But it is just, and it is just that, and we have to turn to the Constitution. If the Republicans don't like it, we have to turn to the Constitution. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that Section 2 of the Constitution, of the 14th Amendment, actually negates the whole independent legislature theory, you know, aside from the fact that these guys all take an oath to their constitutions, state constitutions, and how dare they want to violate that oath to the Constitution?
Yeah, I think there's some really big issues here. Thanks much, Mark, for the call. And I'm so glad to hear you back on the air calling in. Your voice sounds strong. I'm glad you're doing well with your battle against cancer, my friend. Good to hear from you. Mark brings up a couple of really important things there, right? We all, these elected officials, we need to hold them to their oaths. And what do these words mean? If they are to mean anything, there was no argument about what needed to be done with the default. And I don't think anybody should be particularly surprised that a deal was struck. What is really interesting to me is, again, do you really think an argument can be made that Biden did not take the GOP to the woodshed on this one? I mean, let's just look at a few baseline facts here. And then I want to hear from you, Dynamo Dave in Duluth. Listen, a couple of basic facts here. First and foremost, when we start looking at the deal, its most basic Republican accomplishment, right, is the reduction or the supposed reduction in spending. But there really isn't one, right? So this deal takes us through January of 2025. It suspends the debt ceiling entirely. And listen, McCarthy went into this asking for $4.5 trillion in spending cuts. What did he get? A tiny fraction. I'm not going to do math on the air lest I embarrass myself. He got $136 billion in cuts, and that's on the high side of those estimates. $4.5 trillion, $136 billion. Yeah, I think I'm going to call that a win. That's just factoid one. I've got more of those. But Dynamo Dave from Duluth, thanks so much for calling the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say? Who's the big winner? Biden and the Dems or the GOP McCarthyists?
I think Biden ate McCarthy's and that Republicans, their lunch. He ate their lunch. I don't think most of those people in that Freedom Caucus even understand what the debt ceiling was. I think they thought it was a spending bill.
And do you think they actually thought it was like a ceiling? Like they were going to run into some sort of ceiling that was, I mean, seriously, I couldn't agree with you more, Nate.
But I think they thought it was, you know, that this is like the budget. This was the budget for, you know, the next few years or something. And that they were trying to get what they wanted out of a budget. But they didn't understand this is to pay the debt we already did, prior Congresses or whatever has already committed to. And anyway, but they were doing this grandstanding thing to get their sound bites in front of the American public. You know, to say, oh, we're spending too much money and whatever. And then, oh, we got to boost the defense. And that has nothing to do with
Yeah, nothing to do with nothing here, right? This is about making good on the debt that we've issued and the promises that we've made to our bondholders, our treasury holders. I couldn't agree with you more, Dave. Again, here's another real basic fact. McCarthy went into this trying to get 10 years of budget cuts, and he only got two. And they ain't even really cuts. So I really think when you look at this on balance, this is a huge win for Biden. It takes the debt ceiling off of the table for the rest of this term of his presidency. Now, we could still face a government shutdown if Congress can't fill in the details on the budgets each year. And that's always a big challenge. So government shutdown remains an issue. But interestingly enough, Biden and McCarthy actually tried to put a little bit of a stick into this bill to try to compel Congress to actually avert government shutdowns, which I think is yet another feather in President Biden's cap because it makes it so much harder for the Bananas Freedom Caucus to try to extort Joe Biden and Democrats and those that care about working families in this country. Here's the little provision that they stuck into this, the default bill that the president signed this past Saturday. The agreement between Biden and McCarthy, I'm reading from the New York Times, attempts to prod Congress to pass all its spending bills and avoid a shutdown by threatening to reduce spending that is important to both parties. If lawmakers have not approved all 12 regular funding bills by the end of the year, the agreement tightens its spending caps on both things that Democrats like and things that conservatives like. So they effectively agreed, and McCarthy dealt away, in many ways, the ability for these nut jobs like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, who I'm sure, like Dynamo Dave pointed out, have absolutely no freaking idea how federal budgeting works, or for that matter, government. So again, I think that's a huge strategic win for President Biden. I see we've got Ross from Middleton weighing in. Who won this big showdown, Ross, McCarthy and the GOP, or good old President Joe Biden and the Dems?
Okay, so if I was going to try to be the moderate, I would say both won. But I think the reason why it becomes a Biden victory is because he comes across, this I think was politically far more astute than maybe the Obama years or some Republican. Because I think Biden recognized that you have to give the appearance of being reasonable, of having a kind of bargaining, going, you know, bargaining with them. And it gave it allowed McCarthy to save face, because they could have played hardball. And we all kind of know that this is not the time to talk about the budget. You know, that this is basically just the time to sign off. We recognize we got these bills, we got to pay them. And most of us Democrats recognize that the Republicans are in this weird fantasy world in which they're so worried about the budget and all that kind of stuff. Biden wins on this, and I think this is going to help if he runs up against Trump again, because people are going to look at Trump and say, okay, he's still crazy, but they can look at Biden and say, yeah, he's old, whatever, but at least he's still reasonable.
He's still got it when it comes to this hard-knuckled politics that you got to do to get these things like avoiding a default and global economic crisis. Stick with us. It is the Maggie Dawn Show. You can call in 844-967-2789. Stay tuned. More to come after this break on the Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. This is the Maggie Dawn Show, and I am your host, Maggie Dawn, here on Civic Media. You can listen to me basically throughout southeastern Wisconsin on WAUK. But as I understand it, the Civic Media empire in Wisconsin has been growing, and you can hear me out of Madison on Mad Radio, WMDX 92.7. I can be heard in Racine on WRJN 99.9 FM. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 1590, join us from wherever you may be in this state or in the great beyond. You can reach us at 844-967-2789. And we were talking about last segment, who won the great default showdown? McCarthy, with all of his preening and chest thumping, or cool Joe Biden and the Democrats? I think this is pretty much a hands down, almost clearing of the tables for Joe Biden. Now, given that you had a Republican House, there was going to have to be some horse trading. If you want to weigh in on what you think he should have done instead of the deal that was made, feel free to call us 844-967-2789. But I began this hour by talking about the values that I think we share more in common than those things that divide us. And I thought that this default deal struck by President Joe Biden was a great reflection of the values that I think all Americans can agree about. And the concessions forced by Republicans, though very few in number, and I would argue marginally and low in impact, really reveal everything that you need to know about today's grand old party. So at base, the big concession sketched out in this bill was that spending has to remain flat for Joe Biden in 2024, and it can increase by 1% in 2025. Now, in real dollar terms, this means that it is, in effect, a slight decrease in spending, because obviously inflation will be greater than flat zero in 2024, and it'll exceed 1% in 2025. But there's, of course, some interesting accounting and budget allocations that can be done to soften the blow of even those most de minimis restrictions. We got to really get into the bill to understand the values that Republicans wanted to articulate and the values that Joe Biden was able to uphold in the particularities of the default deal. So let's start with this. But Joe Biden was able to rebuff every effort made by Republicans to pinch the working poor and the middle class. Joe Biden defended those who work for a living in this country in every element of this deal. And where the Republicans were able to make inroads was basically to not worry so much if grandma goes hungry. Here's what McCarthy tried to extract and eventually was able to extract. There are new work requirements for food stamps for folks 50 to 54 in age before the work requirement cut off at age 49. So we're talking about older folks. And the work requirement and its work or job training requirements that now newly apply to folks aged 50 to 54 is that you have to be looking for work, working or enrolled in job training for at least 80 hours a month. So that's 2 weeks out of 4 weeks. Now, of course, there are income limitations that apply to food stamps. So I want to be sure we're all understanding what's going to happen here, right? Would be that older folks that don't have children are now going to have to spend at least 2 weeks of every month in job training, looking for a job or in current work. Well, if you already can't afford food, even if you're doing those things, and most folks that need food stamps are engaged in some kind of work unless they are disabled, unhoused, or have other challenges. And by the way, folks that are unhoused and veterans, as well as anyone who came out of the foster care system, are forever exempted from this work requirement. That's actually what Joe Biden was able to get for folks. I would respectfully offer that requiring people who are already not able to feed themselves to come up with part-time work is not going to make them instantly able to feed themselves. We're talking about folks in serious food insecurity, persistent food insecurity. I don't want to see grandma go hungry, but the GOP does. And I want to emphasize that in exchange for that concession, which is just going to make grandma go hungry, Joe Biden got forever exempted from the work requirements. Veterans, those that were previously in the foster care system, as well as folks that are unhoused. That actually, on balance, according to the Congressional Budget Office, will end up expanding the food stamp program. So here again, you have the GOP, led by McCarthy, engaging in theatrics that'll just make grandma go hungry, while at the same time, Joe Biden actually is able to effect an expansion of the food stamp program for veterans, those that are unhoused, and anyone that was in our foster care system. That's a value I can get behind. Feeding people. Yep. Uh-huh. Feeding people. All right, let's turn to the military. Untouched and unlimited in any way, through the default deal, was Joe Biden's proposed budgets to fund the military, $886 billion in 2024, rising to $895 billion in 2025. They didn't touch that. And in fact, Joe Biden is expanding healthcare coverage for veterans through this default deal. So supporting our veterans and defending our country, yes, values that Joe Biden got behind and defended in this default deal. I can go on. But before we get into this next segment, I want to seed this question to y'all. because I'm going to tie it all together when we get into segment three of this hour of the Maggie Dawn Show. And that is, what is the characteristic of politicians that bothers you the most? What is the thing that universally they tend to engage in, left or right? Please don't call up and say lying. What is the behavior that they engage in that most infuriates you? Because there is one particular one that drives me through the roof. And both Republicans and Democrats displayed this in spades when it came to this default deal. More on this. I want to hear from you. 844-9- I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. You can join us, 844-967-2789. Question pending for the second half of the show is, what is it that politicians do that really bothers the heck out of you? I got a laundry list, but there's a couple of things that really jump right to the top. And what went down with Joe Biden's, default masterpiece deal exemplifies it both from the left and the right. But we've got a friend joining us. Before I tell you what I think, what about what other people think? Jeannie from Eau Claire, you're up. What do you hate most about what politicians do?
Well, first of all, I want to say what I love the most, and that is so great to have you on the air now so we can hear you every day, because I think you're brilliant and feisty, and you got a lot of knowledge to give us. So thank you so much. I appreciate your time and availability to teach us some new things.
Okay, well, thanks, Jeannie. I really appreciate. Yeah, tell me what you think.
Okay, I think it was a big show. I think it was a power play. I think it was, it was like a bunch of kids. And they were holding hostage, and it was sickening. It was like, this is our country, folks. You took an oath. You're lucky to be in that place, the highest office in our country. Do some work instead of playing all these games and getting your face, your mugs on the TV. That really frustrates me. And I think Biden did a really good job, but they're inappropriate, hateful, sarcastic, nasty. Mouths, that drives me bananas. Absolutely zero empathy for anybody. And it's like, where did people pick these guys up? We've got a lot better Americans than this that care about our country and the people in it. So that's my 2 cents worth for the night, Maggie.
Thanks so much, Jeannie. Really appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening. You too can join us. I especially want to hear from the many women I know out there that are listening. Ladies, folks don't ask us enough what we think about things. I mean, that's just facts right there, especially in this state. We haven't had a woman mayor in Milwaukee. We haven't had a female governor. We got to speak up more. I especially want to hear what you have to say and what you think about things. 844-967-2789. I just want to hit a couple more like highlights of this default masterpiece that I think Biden put together. On regulation, there were some compromises to streamline federal permit processing. Manchin got his pet Mountain Valley pipeline project done. Now, of course, environmentalists had objected to this for years, but this was largely expected to eventually happen. So not a huge win for the GOP, and certainly some horse trading there to hopefully secure Manchin's cooperation on some future legislative initiatives of this president. On COVID relief funds, $30 billion in unspent money from a previous COVID relief bill signed by Mr. Biden was a real top line Republican priority entering negotiations. Now, some of that money is going to be repurposed into other non-defense discretionary spending. So the money stays in the budget, but it's getting repurposed away from some of those COVID relief funds. Now, the economist in me will tell you that some of those things to cool the economy down a bit on balance will actually help tamp down inflation. But our economy continues to do extraordinarily well. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in decades, and job growth and GDP, again, increasing at stronger than expected levels, which is really, again, kudos to the president. Student loan forgiveness saved. Holy cow. Yeah, that was a big talking point from the right. Joe Biden kept that in his legislative accomplishment list. What did he concede? Oh, well, you know, that whole loan abatement period of time that's continuing to go on. Well, it was scheduled to come off in September, but Joe Biden conceded they're going to actually kick in the loan repayments again in August. So a big 30-day win there from the GOP. Last but certainly not least, McCarthy had come in guns a-blazing, trying to basically take all of the additional funding that had been promised to the IRS to go after rich folks and corporate tax cheats. Again, there's a value that I think we can all get behind, going after rich folks and corporate tax cheats to make sure that they pay their fair share and not just us little guys. They wanted to try to pull back the vast majority of an additional $80 billion that Biden had allocated to the IRS. Instead, around a quarter of that is what is getting pulled out. And the White House is saying that basically they can sort of deal with that, and that most of the programmatic increases that had been planned and the addition of 87,000 new IRS agents, those new folks are going to stay on the books. They're not going away. So the White House's take on that is we're still going to go after those tax cheats in corporate America and in the highest earning income categories in these United States. So again, I think on balance, what we're looking at here is simply a victory across the board for Joe Biden. Now, here's the thing that I wanted to share with you about. What is it about politicians that bothers me the most? Now, Jeannie pointed out sort of a lack of empathy. I think a lot of times that comes from the fact that our elected representatives don't really represent us very often, do they? A lot of them are fabulously wealthy. And that indeed is part of the problem, but those aren't the things that bother me the absolute most. There are two things that top my list of the things politicians do, both on the right and left, that really grind my gears. Here's the first one. Geez, I think I've always wanted to say grind my gears on the radio. Now I've done it. Okay, here's thing one. Thing one is that I realize that politics is performance. But I always understood it to be performance that is supposed to inform and persuade, and to do so not just with rhetoric, but rhetoric grounded in facts. And that performance was engaged by those who raised their hand to be elected officials for the furtherance of the common good. That those were sort of the agreed upon principles that we were going to vociferously disagree from time to time, perhaps about the what, but most often about the how. But that politicians would engage in this performance to engage us and to persuade us by informing and then using rhetoric and flowery language to win the argument. But that the argument at its root, what they finally did when it came time to vote or introduce legislation, would always be in what they knew to be fundamentally the public's best interest. The default debate is such a clear example of utter moral failure of so many elected officials on the right and the left. There was no vote that anyone should be able to reasonably justify against that default deal. No one on the right or the left should have felt like they were honestly and in good faith fulfilling their constitutional duty by voting no. No one. Democrat or Republican. So let's now turn to our Wisconsin congressional delegation to understand who engaged in performative action over informative action in the best interests of all of us. Those that voted against the default deal included the following members of Wisconsin's congressional delegation: Mark Pocan, a Democrat from District 2, Gwen Moore, Democrat from District 4, Tom Tiffany, Republican from District 7, and Ron Johnson, our genius Republican senator. The rest of the delegation voted yes. That includes Rep. Ryan Stile out of District 1, Van Orden, our own insurrectionist from District 3, Scott Fitzgerald, District 5, Grothman, District 6, Gallagher out of 8, and our Senator Tammy Baldwin up for re-election in 2024. Here is what Gwen Moore said when asked about her no vote. And this, to me, folks, is the problem. Quote, "This is not a great bill." First of all, I just disagree with her. It was the best, absolutely the best possible bill that Biden could get done with nearly negligible impacts. Now, the values expressed by McCarthy and the GOP in crafting this bargain certainly care that they don't care about hungry grandmas. They don't care about veterans. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about going after tax cheats and rich people. They will be held to account by that, I hope, by their own voters and base. But Gwen should have known better. This is not a great bill. She said, the notion that it could have been worse, that's obvious, but this is their bill. I'm not sure who she's talking about there. There, you mean the American people's bill? Indeed, because global economic catastrophe would not be good for the American people. I'll go back to her quote. This is their bill. I'm not the deciding vote. Here's what enrages me. She then concluded by saying this: if I'm the deciding vote, I'm not going to let us default. So she knows she should vote yes, but voted no just as a protest vote. It is unfortunate, and I think really the more that we don't hold politicians on the right and the left to account when they engage in these performative acts, when they don't do what they know they should simply because they want to lodge a protest vote or get their name in the paper or appease the base. Those are the sorts of actions that when played out over and over again at higher and higher stakes lead us to where we are in terms of dysfunction and distrust. Why is that? Is it that if you know you should vote for it, you're not voting for it? I also say that to Representative Pocan and Representative Tiffany, and especially to Senator Johnson. So that's thing one, is when our elected officials don't do what they absolutely know is in our country and their constituents' best interests. That's a sad moment. It's cynical at a level that I find distasteful. It assumes that voters aren't knowledgeable enough to know that they've got played, that they're being pandered to. We all should be insulted by actions like that. It's why I find so much of what is engaged these days by so many on the GOP to be so deeply offensive, because it's exploitative. It assumes that people won't know, that we won't care to find out, that we won't care to debate one another about these issues because they're too contentious, too difficult to talk about. But that's not what we can do. We have to ask them those questions again and again. Wait a minute. You knew, Representative Moore, that you should vote for this, but you didn't because it was a bad bill. And notice she doesn't say anything about what specifically was wrong with the bill. Doesn't cite any facts and figures from, you know, say the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. So that's thing one that bothers me about politicians. And I want to drop a footnote here, because Wisconsin's own version of the default debate is happening right now in every town hall, every common council, every city council, village board, and in our state house. And that is about shared revenue and sales taxes for Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee. And there is not a single elected official in this state, conservative or liberal, that if they're voting what they know to be for the best interests of Wisconsin and their constituencies, that would vote against either of those measures, either shared revenue or the sales tax. Listen, we're going to be back with more in a few. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the very first ever episode of The Maggie Dawn Show here on Civic Media. You can always download the app to listen perfectly clearly at your leisure. We will be back with more in a moment. 844-967-2789. I want to hear about your pride experiences, folks, because happy Pride, Wisconsin.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine. You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying. No, I ain't lying. You know I can't stand it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. And you know what? I can't stand those politicians doing performative instead of informative, not doing what they know is right, simply to pander to the base. It brings us all low. But here's the other thing I hate. And then I want to hear about your great Pride weekend experiences. I was at Milwaukee's parade. Boy, was that a good time. Before we get to the good stuff, the one last beef about politicians, and it's waste, right? It's audacious waste, whether it's in their own campaign spending or in how they approach a taxpayer's dollar. I have often said to folks that interact with me in my 9-to-5 work that I view myself as having almost a fiduciary responsibility to taxpayers. And if I were ever a candidate for public office, I would feel similarly about anyone who ever cracked open their pocketbook to give me some of their hard-earned money. But not all politicians view it that way. And I hate to be getting on Gwen Moore's complaint train today, but I cannot help but comment on this article that came out this past week about how the representative has chosen to spend donations into her leadership PAC. So leadership PACs were set up in the 70s to allow federal lawmakers who were big brand named lawmakers like Representative Moore fundraise for other representatives. And their spending is tracked and there's pretty loose rules about their spending. And all I wanna point out here, because you can go read the article for yourself, is that of the entire Wisconsin congressional delegation, Representative Johnson is the third largest amount of donations to her leadership PAC, but spends the lowest percentage of anyone in the Wisconsin congressional delegation on actual money to support other Democratic candidates. Only 17% of the over $700,000 that her leadership PAC has raised in the last two election cycles has gone to help fellow Democratic candidates. Now, all else being equal, if you happen to be a name brand representative from a lower earning, a lower wealth, a lower income district, it may very well be the case that you may see a larger proportion of your leadership PAC expenses going directly to candidates because you have to expend more on infrastructure to fundraise, meaning hosting events, traveling to them, et cetera, et cetera. But the differential for Representative Moore is just shocking. 17%. Now, on average in Congress, folks that have these setups spend 50% or greater on actual direct political contributions. The next lowest contributor and Scott Fitzgerald at 35%. But here's what, the things that Representative Moore spent the other 83% on are a little bit stomach turning. $6,000 on trips to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. And yeah, you entertain donors and whatnot, and that's part of it. But six G's at an average of $376 per visit. Whew. 13 dinners at a Kobe Japanese steakhouse at a total cost of $2,000. $4,600 to Blackline Limousines. $1,000 for food and drinks at Luke's Lobster in Chicago. I didn't know that was such a hot spot. I'll have to check that out. Luke's, you can always call the Civic Media Group to advertise on our great radio network. Spent nearly $18,000 at the Fairmont Sonoma Mission Inn and Spa. Eek. 19 G's on 336 trips with Uber and 176 meals with Uber Eats. Listen, this is small potatoes when it comes to how most Republican legislators are bought and sold. But this is problematic. It's not just problematic for Representative Moore. She's taking advantage of one of the rules in our, you know, campaign funding rule book. But that's the problem. It's the campaign funding rule book. We've created a perverse system of incentives that has elected officials just looking to who's going to write their next check to get them through that next election cycle. Boy, that's really not the way we get the best and most optimal decision-making, is it? It's just a terrible system of incentives. CJ, I saw you there. I was waiting to ask you my next question for all of our great listeners, which was, how was your big Pride weekend? We're going to move on to the good news before we break for the day. I lost CJ. I hope he did hang out at one of the Pride festivals to kick off this great LGBTQ plus Pride month of celebrations here. But I was happy and humbled to attend the Milwaukee Pride Parade with County Executive David Crowley, the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors, and Milwaukee County's brand new employee resource group for our LGBTQ plus employees called PRISM. The thing that I like most about the Pride Parade, and I've been and walked in a lot of different parades in my time, but the Pride Parade, and especially the Pride Parade in Milwaukee, the thing that I like most about it is that you see people from absolutely every walk of life at that parade, and it has a sense of shared joy and enthusiasm, love and acceptance that I rarely see or feel in any other circumstance except during that parade. It is joyful and people are so happy to be there. There's truly a sense of community. And so I want to thank the county executive and the county board of supervisors for really rolling out the red carpet to help celebrate Pride with the rest of Milwaukee. This year, we wrapped our county buses. Check them out, because we say gay in Milwaukee. To my LGBTQ community friends out there, we love you. Be you, be proud, be out. To the rest of Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin, it's been such a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show.
Coming back to you, but then.